Hello, listeners. Hello, Jennifer Lawrence. Hello, Tom Hiddleston. Hello, everybody else. And goodbye, 2013. In a slightly delayed manner. It is actually 2014. We're a little bit late, but hey, that's just how things are. Especially over here. You should know this by now. We all have this schedule. But Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Woo! Happy New Year, Miss Reyes. You over there?
Hello, Happy New Year.
Yep. Do we all have good New Year's?
Yeah, it's alright.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'll just take it as face value that it was near. Is it alright? Neither of you bothered about...
It was a night. It was a night of things.
Indeed. It was a night of many things for many people, I would imagine. It was also the new year of a new slate of movies and the wrap-up for Box Office or Bust, which we'll get into a little bit later. But yeah, this is the second part of our sort of goodbye 2013, split into two sections. So if you haven't listened to the first bit, go do that now, and then you can find out what our worst five movies of the year were, and then come back now to find out what our top five movies of the year were. Just general consensus, all thought it was a good year for films?
It was an amazing year for films.
Sure.
Yes. I presume you would say it was better than last year, Gwen?
Oh, yeah. It's funny because I just remember early on this year just being so impressed with every movie I saw. So it was hard to kind of whittle them down to just five really good ones.
You're telling me. It's been a painstaking process. Painstaking process. But we've done it. We have them. We have our top five films of the year. We may have some crossovers. Who knows? We might have completely different lists. I'm kind of excited.
Me too.
I do like finding out what you guys have put at the very top of the tree. We'll go alphabetical order, so we'll start with Dan in at number five.
Do you want to do a few honourable mentions first?
Oh, yes.
There's just so many.
Of course. Sorry, I'm getting so excited, I'm getting ahead of myself.
I just want to get to the top five now.
Honourable mentions for you, Dan. Anything that was great but didn't quite make it into your top five?
Jeez, there's loads of things that were great and didn't make it into my top five. Frances Ha, which I loved and was in my top five at the middle of the year, didn't make it in. Blue is the Warmest Colour, just about missed the cut, as did The Wolf of Wall Street and Spring Breakers. You'll be disappointed to hear, Mo.
Oh, it didn't make it into the top five.
It didn't make it into the top five. And neither did Wajida, which I had as my number one.
Yeah.
But then I've cooled on it a little bit, so it's still in my top 10, actually, but it's just missed out on the top five. But yeah, it's been pretty amazing this year, so there's so much that could potentially get in there. And any other year, I think those probably would have all been in, like, a top five, but no, this year, they've all been knocked out, unfortunately.
Gwen, what about you, honourable mentions? Things that you really, really loved and kind of wanted to squeeze into your top five, but just couldn't do it because you couldn't get rid of what's in there.
Oh, man. Well, one of the movies I was really disappointed that I couldn't make room for was Fruitvale Station, which came out earlier this year. And it was just such a heartbreaking, sad film. And it's interesting because it's getting a lot of attention right now for kind of being emotionally manipulative. But, I mean, it's a story about a guy who gets killed trying to just go home. So, of course, something like that. So I was really sad that I couldn't make room for Fruitvale on my list.
I'm going to call bullshit on that emotional manipulative thing because it made it into my top 25.
It did
make it in, and I love the film, and I thought it was fantastic because you really root for the character throughout the film, even though he's, you know, not had the best of starts. You kind of get behind him, so I'm calling BS on those naysayers. Anything else that didn't quite make it in?
Well, as much as I want to say Beautiful Creatures, which happened to be one of my favorite films of
2013. You're still hanging on to Beautiful Creatures?
I have to let that one die because the joke's not funny anymore.
Because you've slowly come into the realization it's probably you and maybe only you that's really championing the film at this point.
Yeah, I think it's really just me. And it's really sad, though, because I just watched it again for like who knows how many times. And I'm still really bummed out that it's never going to get a sequel. Because it left it as such a good cliffhanger.
Never say never. That's what Justin Bieber's taught me.
These are my legit issues. But yeah, and I was also a little sad I couldn't add Starbuck or Hunger Games Catching Fire into my list, or Frozen. Because I loved all those films.
Yeah, a lot of people love
Frozen. Do you want to build a snowman? Sorry.
I can't.
It's just... It's a little bit of a kind of knee-jerk reaction whenever I hear the word Frozen now.
Is it worth checking out? Because I've not seen it.
Yes, it's really
It's
good.
so good.
Okay.
And the
Let
music's good.
it go. Sorry.
Dan's just going to be singing the
It
whole
doesn't it, it doesn't
soundtrack
sound like it doesn't sound like Dan singing it though.
Oh, well, in that case, I
It
don't want to
totally
see
does.
it.
It totally does. Don't lie to yourself, Gwen.
Oh dear, I might save it for next
And
year.
what about you, Mal? What were some ones that you were sad to see people
Oh
doing but
goodness. Well, as we mentioned, Fruitvale Station came very close. Broken Circle Breakdown, which I absolutely loved. The Polarizing Only God Forgives was just outside my top 10. After Lucia, which still remains an amazing film, even though it's incredibly hard to watch. Danny Boyle's Trance, which at the midway point was my number one film, I think, just didn't make it. Same with Blue Jasmine. Just didn't make it either. Upstream Color and Act of Killing as well. So, I mean, just the include exclusion of those from my top five tells you just how good this year has actually turned out to be. And I've left been left eating my words because I was kind of going, nah, it doesn't think it's going to be a good year this year, guys. I think it looks rubbish, but it turned out to be pretty amazing. So there you go.
But
I
that's the best kind of disappointment, when
exactly
your year's actually
exactly.
really good.
When you turn that disappointment into nothing but unbridled joy. It's my favorite disappointment in the world. So there you go. Let's get into it, because I'm chomping at the bit here, guys, to see what
Okay.
is in your top tier, your very top five films out of everything we've all seen, and goodness knows, combined, we've seen a shit ton this year. This is the very, very elite, and everything on here gets our extreme stamp of approval. So, listeners, if there's something in here you haven't seen, chances are you probably should be checking it out at ASAP. So, let's get into it. Number five, Dan, what is spearing the charge for your top five?
Number five is a film that you've actually just mentioned.
Oh.
It's Shane Carruth's amazing, amazing film called Upstream Color. Which he wrote, directed, starred in, edited, and did the music for, as well as produced. It's really kind of a one-man show for Shane Carruth, and it just shows how talented this guy is. He made Primer about, I think it was about 9 years ago now, and really kind of showed his promise, but this time he's just like really built on it after almost a decade, and really just kind of reminded everybody how singular and how talented he is. It's a very mysterious and enigmatic and kind of weird film, but the talent on shows there is kind of undeniable. So yeah, that gets my number five spot on the list.
Awesome. I am a big champion of that film. It only just missed my top five. I can tell you it came in at number six. That's how close it was.
Ooh, just missed out.
But yeah, it's an amazing showcase. And like you said, he's been away for like 9 years, and it's kind of like, well, whatever happened to the Primer guy? And then he's just like, bam, surprise, bitches, I've done it all. And you're like,
I've done
wow.
it better as well, hopefully.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's not going to be another 9 years before
Yeah,
we
well,
see Shane Carruth's
that's what I'm
one-man
thinking.
show again.
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping he's kind of got something in the pipeline pretty soonish, because, you know, I think the world of film could do with some more material from that man. Number five for you, Miss Reyes. What is there?
Well, my number five, since it just beat out Hunger Games, Catching Fire, was Gravity, which
Oh.
Alfonso Cuarón's. I just think it was such a stunning film. Like maybe plot-wise, it's not the greatest movie this year, but the acting and the visual spectacle of it is just so hard to forget. And I think it's really going to be a movie that people will remember for a long time. And I've seen it now 3 times and loved it every single time I saw it.
The phrase modern classic kind of gets bandied about quite a lot, but I think it's definitely something that is attributed to that film because it's a game changer in so many senses, in terms of not just how the film looks, but the experience. I went to see Gravity this year. It was my first ever IMAX experience, and seeing that film on such a huge screen with such an immersive sound system, it wasn't even like you were watching Sandy Bullock float about in space. It was like you were there with her. And that is like the power of that film. And granted, like you say, the plot's not the most tightest to come out this year, but holy shit, that film is an experience to be held
It is an
in
experience. And it's one
magical
of those movies
glory.
that I just wonder if it's going to be like Avatar, where it's really only good as a big cinematic experience. Like I'm curious to see how it's going to play in home video.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think you'll pick up on more things, more technical aspects. I presume maybe the sound work, you'd be more sort of paying attention to the more intimate details of the film that kind of go bypassed on a bigger screening. I don't know, but either way, you know, space movies, or just movies of that scope in general, have really got a new high to reach in terms of how, terms of their quality and their projection. So, awesome pick. My number five is a film that Dan just mentioned, and a film from which the graphic novel I've just started reading, and it's pretty good. Blue is the Warmest Colour. It was one of my most anticipated films from the second half of the year, and it really did not disappoint. It is a long film, it's 3 hours, but it doesn't feel like it, because you get so wrapped into the characters and their life on screen, and Jesus, those two women don't get accredited with some kind of nominations coming into awards season, then there is some foul play and fuckery afoot, because they make the film so heart-wrenching. Ah, I could just talk about it for ages, but I'll probably end up start crying. So,
I just want to endorse you on that, because I think her name's Adele Exarchopoulos. Like, that is, for me, the best performance of the year that she gives. So I totally endorse you 100% on that.
Oh,
they need awards claim.
Absolutely. It's worth seeing it just for their performances alone. But I think the film's put together really nicely as well. You know, forget the controversy if you've seen it. Forget all the he say, she say about the film. Go watch it and experience it for yourself. It's brutal. It's hard. And you will probably cry quite a lot, but it's worth it. Every single frame of it's worth it. Number four for you, Dan, what have you got?
Number four is probably going to be number one on a lot of critics' lists. I've seen it on a lot of critics' lists at number one. It's kind of the front runner for the Oscar at the moment. It's 12 Years a Slave. Steve McQueen's very brutal and very harrowing depiction of slavery in the antebellum South, with a just a myriad of amazing performances, and it's so beautifully made and yet so brutal in its subject matter. And it's just an incredible story about this guy who manages to somehow like retain his humanity, like amid like the worst possible like scenario that you can think of. And you know, Steve McQueen's an amazing director, and I hope that he gets some kind of Oscar recognition, because he just does so much with this film, from, you know, those kind of real intense long shots that he does to kind of like distorting the passage of time. You never really know how much time has gone past, just to really kind of immerse you in Solomon Northup's situation. And I mean, we just talked about some of the best acting of the year, and I think Chiwetel Ejiofor certainly needs to be mentioned among them, because he's incredible as Solomon Northup. So yeah, that's my number four, 12 Years a Slave.
Also, a big props to Fassbender in that film as well, who has never been so delightfully horrible.
He's terrifying. He's absolutely horrible.
He's hateful, but yet you love him because of it, because it's such a conviction performance. But yeah. Awesome pick. What about you, number four, Ms. Reyes? What have you got?
Well, it's so funny to me, because all the reasons that Dan loves 12 Years a Slave is all the reasons I hated that movie. It didn't make my list.
Get
at
out!
All,
blasphemy!
Sorry. No, I had to wash the taste out of my mouth with a little shame afterwards, after I saw it.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. But anyway, Going from Dan's dark and seriousness of 12 Years a Slave, I'm jumping into my favorite movie of the summer, which was The Heat, starring Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. And that it's amazing that a comedy made one of my top lists, but I thought the movie was so funny, and it shows a buddy-buddy cop with gender roles reversed, that you could have easily had two women playing the role just as easily as you could have had two men playing the role. And I thought that was one of the things that made it so versatile and interesting. And it had a really nice heart, and it's hilariously funny. And I think even Mal, who was like a non-believer, really enjoyed it too.
Yeah, I was really kind of set against this film after Bridesmaids. And I must admit, the trailer work didn't do anything to kind of persuade me. But on the basis of how much you championed the film earlier this year, I went to see it, and I've got to admit, I really, really enjoyed it. I laughed pretty much throughout, and it's really quite interesting and refreshing to kind of see archetypes in a film that we've seen done dozens and dozens of times, but those kind of archetypes inverted and kind of turned on the head a little bit, I thought was really quite refreshing to see. And I'm not going to lie, I would kind of want to see some more from those two, because I think they've got really good chemistry.
Well, from what I know, that they are doing a sequel to it, so
Oh,
it's
cool.
very exciting.
Well, I for one shall be purchasing a ticket when it hits theaters. At number four for me was it was a real close runner between this and Trance at the mid-year point. But on watching it again, it kind of overtook, and it just brought so many details back out to why I enjoyed this film first time round so much, and even more so second time round. It is Stoker Chan Park Wook's first English spoken film, and it is just a fabulous gambit of gothic mystery, bizarre character portrayals, and like a very twisted, darkly edged coming of age story for Mia Wasikowska. I can never say that girl's surname.
Mia
Wasikowska?
Wasikowska,
Yes, that lady, who puts in a fantastic performance, and just every single frame seems to be deliberate, and it's just very visual and very sensory. And yeah, it's a little bit artsy, and not everyone will like it. That's totally understandable, but I, for one, really love that film.
Cool.
I agree. That's one of my favorite movies of the year too.
I
Awesome.
concur, yeah.
At number three, Dan, what have you got? We're getting close now.
Number three is one that Gwen just mentioned, actually. My number three is Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity, which I can't really add a lot to what you guys have said. It is just such an immersive and intense experience. It's so visually stunning, right from like the special effects work through to like the camera work, which is like so effective in making you feel like you're kind of part of that setting and you're kind of like floating through space with them, and it's so well performed. And it's kind of narratively it's kind of thin, but then there's so many ideas that it has in there that you can kind of forgive that. And I just think this is kind of next level filmmaking. So I give Gravity my number three spot this year for that reason.
I know some people have kind of pulled away at the plot and whatnot, but I kind of feel like the sort of more pulpy, at times almost cheesy inflections from George Clooney actually adds to the film. I have no problem with that whatsoever, and I kind of think it works really well.
That was one of my criticisms the first time around, George Clooney. I didn't really like him, but I sort of see now that he's like this kind of, he's supposed to represent the kind of fun-loving, adventurous, kind of just go out and do it kind of side, as opposed to Sandra Bullock's kind of escaping from reality and just hiding in like the darkest corners of space to like hide from a from like from life. So I kind of get that now, even though it's still a little bit cringy when he turns up with like Russian vodka and stuff. And but you know what, I can forgive it because I kind of get what he's trying to do and what the film's trying to do with him.
I feel like that film, the only way it could have been better is if there was like no acting in it and it was just like a space documentary for an hour and a half.
It's just 90 minutes of Sandra Bullock
They should
floating
just play it.
around.
Yeah. Just float around, like just do it all without acting and just freak people out.
Should have just pulled an artist and pulled out a silent film set in
I
space.
mean, that film is just such a great like piece of tension building. Just the most amazing masterclass of tension building. I loved it so much.
Agreed. Oh no, hang on, that's not me.
I'm
It's
sorry. Oh, it's
Gwen.
my
I was
turn.
gonna say,
My turn.
I'm jumping ahead. Oh, I'm so excited.
Sorry, I was so excited about talking about Gravity again. I was like, I love that movie. Well, I'm going to bring up the first documentary that we've put on our list because we had a
Oh.
couple that were left off
Ooh.
for our best contenders. But my number three is a music documentary about backup singers from the beginning of backup singing in Motown all the way to current time, called 20 Feet from Stardom, which was it's just the most delightful and sweet and charming and very interesting and eye-opening documentary about these backup singers. And now what I think is so cool is that these women had this chance to become these iconic voices, a part of these songs that we all know that are part of our rock culture, but they're also getting there, having their second chance and their second chance of stardom right now because of this documentary. And I'm really excited to see that. And it's directed by a woman and it's shown all of these different areas. And I really, really loved the film.
Have I told you that my mum and dad saw this film?
Oh
Have I
no.
told you this story
You
yet?
should have got them
I was
on the
like, my
show
friend
to
Gwen
review
really likes
them.
this film. I was like, my friend Gwen really likes this film. I think you'll like it. And then I didn't hear anything else for about 3 days because they were like, you know what else happened in 20 Feet from Stardom? And I'm like, oh, I've heard all this before. So I feel like I've kind of seen the movie already because like they've kind of relayed the whole story. But there's your recommendation for great Aww, music documentaries so coming in useful. Yeah, they absolutely adored it. I think if they were doing this list, it would be their number one. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Can we get, is it too late to get a top five from them? Can we can we defer to them?
Get our parents' top five.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you really bigging this film up much earlier in the film, and it's been on my mental to watch list, and it still is. Unfortunately, I haven't got around to checking it out yet, but when opportunity does present itself, it's definitely one I want to check out, because I think the subject matter alone seems really interesting.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, because
and it's such a nice like palate cleanser too. Like of all of the dark, sad stuff that we've had to watch this year, it's just such a nice uplifting film.
Which I think is needed, because yeah, there has been an awful lot of dark and bleak shit come out this year, and so the odd palate cleanser is definitely welcome. My number three is a film that Gwen hasn't seen and probably never will get around to seeing, despite several.
I'm glad that you're accepting that now.
Despite several belligerent attempts by both me and Dan,
we tried our hardest.
I don't think we'll stop. I think just out of sheer stubbornness, we will try and get her to this point. But my number three is Before Midnight, which could very well cap off my most beloved cinematic trilogy of all time. I was really kind of nervous and excited about this because obviously I absolutely adore the first two films, but I thought the second film ended so perfectly. And going back to them, I was like, no, don't do it, because you're going to unravel everything you did and it's going to just be messy. But at the same time, I was like, I want to have a little peek into the lives of these two wonderful characters. And everyone on board just does such a fantastic job. Richard Linklater, with his beautifully casual directing, manages to just, again, do the whole fly on the wall thing so well, and the performances are great. You can tell they've really kind of lived with these characters for like 20 years, because they feel real now. They feel absolutely fully fleshed out, and it's a much more, it's less sort of saccharine and sweet, and it's more kind of gritty and shitty in places, but because of that it feels really earnest and honest and just wonderful. And yeah, I just, honestly, I'm just full of love for Before Midnight.
Woo. Gwen, you need to see it.
Seriously, one lady, one day we're going to sit you down and make you watch
it. When I get through my backlog of Doctor Who episodes, maybe I'll consider.
There is no excuse for you to have watched Beautiful Creatures about, what, like four or five times this year and not have seen a single Before movie.
I know.
I think The Beautiful Creatures is a delightful film.
Just going on record.
I will go to my grave supporting that film.
just going on record. I not only saw The Heat, but also watched Pitch Perfect this year as well. You know, on recommendations to appease. So you know,
also,
I'm not saying this for definite, but you know, you might want to think that perhaps you owe me at least one Before film. Just putting it out there. You know, I'm not saying that, but you know, it's out there in the ether if you want to meditate on that.
I do, because otherwise you guys might vote me off the island.
Number two, getting ever so well, this is close as you get, really. Number two, the one film that came as close as possible but didn't quite top the list, your silver medal, silver medal picture for 2013. What have you got, Mr. Seraph?
Well, I'm kind of sorry, Gwen, but I kind of have to beat the drum again. It's Before Midnight.
Yeah!
Which I don't really want to say any more about, because we've just raved about it so much. But yeah, it's beautiful. It's such an incredible story. You know, it's like two people talking for 90 minutes, and yet there is so much, like, so much there about, you know, adult relationships. And you know, when you hit that kind of point where you kind of enter into this midlife kind of romantic crisis, and it's so well performed by Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, and the writing's amazing, and Richard Linklater is just so natural in kind of letting these situations and these emotions all unfold, and it's an incredible movie and incredible achievement, and it lived up to every expectation I had for this third movie. So yeah, that's my silver play spot, Before Midnight.
Whether or not they were to actually act in it or not, I would love to see Delpy, Hawke and Linklater continue writing together, because I think they've got a real knack for dialogue and for people. And whether they were to use whatever they put together as like a starring vehicle, or they were to just write it for somebody else to be in, I genuinely would love to see them continue writing together as a little sort of group.
Oh, totally. Me too. They're very good at what they do when they work together, so I'd love that too.
Awesome. Gwen, number two, what is it that's just missed out by a fraction from the top of your list this year?
I know. And it's funny because this movie had been my number one for months until I saw my number one film. But so my number two is one that we've also already mentioned, Stoker, which I loved and think is like the most beautifully uncomfortable erotic film I've seen in a really long time. And just to beat my Beautiful Creatures but drum a little bit harder, the love interest, this is what I thought was interesting, is when I saw the movie, I saw Stoker first and then I saw Beautiful Creatures later in the day, and one of the actors in Stoker who plays a rapist is the love interest in Beautiful Creatures, so my brain was kind of confused for a while. But I still think Stoker is a beautiful, beautiful film, and I want to see Pak do some more English films, bring that aesthetic to English filmmaking.
Definitely, because I would love to see what kind of landscape he would explore if he was to continue doing that. Because I think this is
And
a.
also, I'd like to see Wentworth Miller do another screenplay.
Me
Yes,
too.
actually, good point. In fact, I'd like to see them both work together again, because I think there's a real solid chemistry between those two.
I think I just need to see Stoker again, full stop. I love that
Yeah, I
film.
think everybody does. Go watch Stoker. Go on.
It's been on HBO in the States for like the last month, so it's every time it's on. If it's not Beautiful Creatures, I'm watching Stoker.
In case you were listening, in case you were listening, in case
Gwen
you.
really loves Beautiful Creatures.
I have this horrible feeling about what might be number one at this point, even though I already know
It's not. I
it's
promise. I promise. It's not on my
Are
list
you
at all.
sure? Because it's not
I
repeated so
promise.
far.
I genuinely promise that that movie did not make my top, didn't
No, I know
even
what
break
it
my
is.
top 20.
I read your list, but then I was like, you didn't move out this one, did you, for Beautiful Creatures?
No.
Stop. Let's stop talking about it before we convince the two, before we kind of win around to do so. Actually, you know what? I've seen it so many times, I think I will put it number one. No, your choices are stuck now, Gwen. You can't change. Sorry. Anyway, number one for you, Mrs. Seraph, your tip top, Top of the Pops film of 2013, the one that just did it more for you than anything else this year.
Well, it's kind of funny because I mentioned this one. Oh, did I mention this one around the halfway point? I reviewed it a little while ago, and it wasn't my number one film for the year. But I've seen it a few times now, and every time I've seen it, it's kind of gone up in my estimation to the point where, like, 24 hours ago, when I was finally putting my list together on Letterboxd, I was like, you know what? This is my number one film of the year. This is the best thing that I've seen this year. And that film is the documentary, The Act of Killing, which is just incredible. I mean, it's first of all, a very important film because it depicts such a scary and such a horrific kind of culture of Indonesia. Were just a little bit of background to it. It's about in the 1960s, there was a sort of military dictatorship, and the dictatorship hired these kind of gangsters to essentially murder millions of people who were suspected, not even like found to be, but suspected of being communists. And the film kind of explores them in modern day and how these people who did this have sort of very proud of it, and you know, they kind of won the war in a sense, and so they've been able to kind of write their own history, and they've kind of wrote themselves as like the victors, and you know, they perform this noble heroic act. And the film kind of gives us this glimpse into how, you know, these are kind of national heroes despite the fact that they are like cold-blooded killers. And they're very just like normal, charming old men, and yet, you know, they tell you stories about how they would like tie people up with barbed wire, and they kind of wax poetic about, you know, oh, like my do you remember my girlfriend's dad? Oh yeah, I took him and killed him, I threw him over a bridge. Like these, like, it's just like this really kind of ordinary people who are actually very, very evil. And the film shows how they, you know, the guests on like this kind of like this morning show, and you know, I guess the US equivalent is like Regis and Kelly, and yet like the total murderers and mass murderers. And the film sort of challenges them to kind of recreate their memories as like short movies, and kind of gives them the cameras and lets them to tell their stories however they want. And in doing so, they sort of face up to the fact that, you know, what they did isn't noble, and you know, they've kind of been framed as these heroes, and yet they're actually, you know, very tortured and very guilty, and really kind of affected by the things that they did, but they've kind of repressed them over many, many years. And it's an amazing film and an amazing achievement. And the very last scene of the film, in which kind of the focus of the film, this guy called Anwar, finally submits to like the fact that he has done these awful things and has like the blood of like thousands of people on his hands, is just like one of the most powerful things I've ever seen. And yeah, it's just a really surreal and really like harrowing and nightmarish documentary, but it's one of the, in fact, I'm quite comfortable in saying it's maybe the best documentary I've ever seen. So it's absolutely worth checking out in all of its 3-hour glory. So my number one film of the year is The Act of Killing.
Awesome. I can't say much more than that, other than it is just a really cerebral, surreal watch, but one that I think is incredibly enlightening and evocative in many, many ways. I just realised I missed my number two, which is really stupid of me to do.
Oh, did you? I'm sorry.
No. That was my fault, because I set you up to do your number one, and without realising, I forgot to mention my number two. Quickly, my number two is Prisoners, I absolutely adored. First time, more so, obviously, because it's got an impact and it's got a bit of a twist with it being a sort of a crime thriller. But I just thought it was incredibly put together. Just performance-wise, there's some fantastic performances, particularly from Hugh Jackman, who I actually think gives a career best in this film, to the cinematography, which is just so, so gorgeous from Mr. Deakins, and just the incredible direction. I just absolutely adored it. I just thought it was an amazing film. So, yeah, my number two, Prisoners. Catching up real quick. Number one for you, Ms. Reyes. What is...
You guys have both sold me on seeing, because I haven't seen Prisoners or Act of Killing, and they're both waiting for me, so I cannot wait to watch them and talk about them. My number one is, like I said, Stoker had been number one up until like the week before Christmas, when I saw Wolf of Wall Street, the new Martin Scorsese film, which is now my number one because it is a bananas, ridiculous, awesome acting performance before Leonardo DiCaprio, and I loved all 3.5 hours of that film.
Wow.
I think it could have gone to 4, in my opinion. It was so good.
You just wanted the crazy train to keep going.
I did not want it to stop. And it's so funny to me because I read all these articles about how people feel like it glorifies those people. And I'm like, I saw the movie and I don't feel like any of it was glorifying. I think it was more of like a cautionary parable, but I loved it.
I'm yet to see it, but I really am chomping at the bit too. It's
bananas.
It looks
it is
it.
A bonkers,
it's kind of crazy.
Bonkers film.
There's a scene in it. I'll just reference it as the lemon scene, which is like, possibly the most insane thing that I have ever seen on film. And like, it's amazing that this is done by a guy who's 71 years old and yet he's still like, you know, he's making like the most like exciting and daring and chaotic movies ever.
And he's just like, I'm old and I'm just going to make whatever the fuck film I want to make. And that is what it is, so much fun.
And for a man who I already have the utmost respect for, my respect goes through the roof when he's thinking on that level, when he's just like, yeah, it's just time to get batshit crazy. Let's do it. Let's crank this up. Let's go for it.
It's amazing that he's not like, it's amazing he's not like really crotchety, like 71 years old, like most directors will be. And yet this just feels like him like kicking off his shoes and just enjoying himself and really enjoying the process of it, which is just so typical of Martin Scorsese because he's just so passionate about this kind of stuff.
Awesome.
What about you, Mal? What's your number one?
Oh, my number one is a film. It just floored me. It just floored me within 5 minutes in. And then I was just a melted pool of ugh to the rest of it. It's that good. From one of the, simply put, one of the most bold, brave directors working today, Steve McQueen. My favourite film of 2013, without a doubt, straight in there, 12 Years a Slave. Just, I know you weren't particularly too fond on it, obviously, as you stated, Gwen, but it's just, oh my goodness, just every single performance, every single motion of how that film was put together is just spellbinding. And It locked my eyes onto the screen and then just had its way with me for the proceeding. Just absolutely floored me. It made me just feel such a range of emotion as well, which is always a key thing for me in a film. If a film can make me think or make me feel, then it's gonna get a big tick for me. And it just kind of brought out so many different emotions throughout, and just I don't even know how to properly articulate just how much I loved it. Just
It made you
absolutely.
feel all the feels.
It made me feel all the feels like four times around. It was just wow. And it just looks amazing as well, which is always a bonus. But yeah.
It's funny, I remained pretty stoic throughout 12 Years a Slave, and I heard loads of people say that they were just like in tears at the end of it, and for like 2 hours and 10 minutes I was like, this is very moving, but I don't feel super emotional. And then the like it's not even the last scene, it's after the last scene, you just kind of get the end credits, and then like the word director Steve McQueen comes up, and it was just like, all right, here come the floodgates, they're up, everything's going now. I think I like left like every possession that I had in the cinema and just bolted, because I was just like in floods of tears, which is just kind of a testament to how powerful the film is, I suppose.
There's moments in that film where I was gripping my seat, literally. I was gripping it out of sheer frustration and anger at people on the screen. And then it's not even the final scene. The final scene is just absolutely bulldozing. It's the final line, and I have to interject a spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, fast forward a little bit because, yeah, just do it and then go see the film. Trust me. But it's when, and I'm gonna tear up thinking about it. But
No, I know.
it's when he says, "Oh, there's nothing to be sorry about." I'm paraphrasing, but it's that where there's no need to apologize, or there's no need to say sorry. I was like, oh, oh my God, you've just broken my brain and my heart. And I was like, oh man. Yeah, just it's amazing. It comes out over here on Friday officially, and I'm gonna be right back in there feeling all the feels again. And loving it as much as I ever have. I think, there's already a lot of talk about this being Oscar fodder, and I can totally see it. And I think it deserves it, and I know it's a bit too early to predict, or to even say anything, but might do pretty well in the Foscars this year. Just saying, might do pretty well, might earn itself a
I was
couple
actually
of
kind of
nods.
laying out some of my awards for this year, and even though it's only, well, I say only number 5 on my list, I think it's kind of sweeped a lot of the top awards, because I think Lupita Nyong'o is amazing in it, and then there's Michael Fassbender
Yes.
who's amazing in it. Stephen Queen's direction's incredible, the writing's amazing. It's just one of those kind of films that technically all around is just kind of stunning. Even Hans Zimmer, even though he's kind of stealing his own, even he's plagiarizing his own score for Inception, it's still amazing. So it's just kind of one of those films that kind of across the board is so admirable, and I think that's probably why it's being hailed as a front runner, because you can look at pretty much every single category and be like, well, 12 Years a Slave certainly deserves something in there, without maybe the exception of special effects.
Yeah, well, maybe not in that department, it might miss out, but yeah, certainly everything else. And honestly, I do think Steve McQueen's one of the boldest and bravest directors, because he puts everything out there, and the topics that he covers in his films. And you look at, he's only made 3 feature films so far, but holy shit, have each and every one of them been powerful in their own right.
He's very unflinching, and I kind of admire him for
Yes,
that.
exactly.
He's a very unflinching kind of personality as well.
He's got a great big sack of steel. He's got big balls of steel, as Steve McQueen, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he swings his balls at next.
That's Steve McQueen.
Swing away, Steve, swing away. So there you go. That is our top fives for this year. Can you believe it's been a whole year already? So quick. Let us know what your top five are. You may have some shared films across the way there. You may have some completely different entries in there for your own personal private lists. But whatever it is, let us know over at screeninvasion.com. look under Invasion Radio and you'll find the little post for this episode there. So go let us know what your favourites were, and we can all rejoice in the wonders of cinema that was. Gwen, do you have to nip off soon?
I do. I was just about to say I have to run because I'm in LA doing the Television Critics Association. But guys, it's always a pleasure. And you can follow my antics and excitement on realvixen.com and Twitter/realvixen if you're interested in keeping up with all the TV stuff that's going on for the next 3 weeks.
Yay. I'll let you know how badly I beat you at Box Office or Bust later.
Okay, good. I can't wait to hear how terrible my predictions were.
I don't worry, we all sucked. We all did terrible.
Oh, okay, good.
You can go on that that note.
Good, I'm glad to know that we were all horrible in our last round. Yeah. But I will talk to you guys soon.
Yes, you will.
Speak to you soon, Gwen. Enjoy LA.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
There she goes, ever busy. Ever busy. That's just how it goes here on the podcast.
I was watching Gwen on TV the other day, you know. Well, not on TV.
Oh, she's back on the television, is she?
She was dressed as a character from Downton Abbey, which I think is pretty cool.
Oh no, for real?
Yeah,
why
totally.
Why did you not tell me this before we started recording?
Because now I can bitch about her while she's not here. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. It's really cool. It's a really good interview. She talks about Downton Abbey related books, and it's on I don't know what the channel is, or I'd plug it for Dallas Morning News or something.
Good Morning Texas, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, she's got a link to it on her Twitter. So
I was going to say, if you go to Real Vixen, you'll be able to find it. See, I'm now going to go have to seek that out.
It's really cute. It's really cool.
Oh boy, it could be worse. She could have been dressed as like a superhero or something. That would have been.
Or her character from Beautiful Creatures, I suppose.
It's true. Maybe she tried to float that idea to the producers, but they were like, from Beautiful what? And she's like, oh, never mind. So yeah, Box Office a Bust.
Let's do it indeed.
Let me pull up the results. Yeah, we all did pretty shocking in our last round. If you can,
yeah, I noticed this when the box office results came out.
Everybody was way off. I can tell you for starters, without even having to look at my notes, none of us got any of the top three correct. Ooh, totally way off. not even close.
So, I think I said Justin Bieber's movie was going to make like close to 100 million, and it bombed like a
bomb. It made like 2 million.
Yeah, it did. I thought the Beliebers would come out in style and really throw their pocket money at it, but
see,
no.
To be fair, you had a valid point, because you know they do love to come out in forces, and unfortunately there are many of them, and they do like to throw their disposable income into shit like that. But do you know what I also think it is, but I don't know if you saw this, but he put out a tweet saying he was retiring. I think it was like the day before the movie came out. And obviously not a veiled attempt at marketing the fact he's got a movie out whatsoever. But I'm guessing maybe they all just sank into a deep depression and just didn't want to leave the house for like 48 hours.
That might explain it, yeah. Your jump ship and went on the 1D boat.
Save us, One Direction! Save us from teenage heartbreak. Is that One Direction's response?
That's just the Bieber fans being whiny.
Oh, I need to sit in a dark room with my headphones and Baby playing on repeat. Save me.
Jesus.
Yeah, so that didn't do well, and none of our picks did well. So, yeah, none of us got any of the top three correct. So it comes down to closest cash predictions. And for Walter Mitty, you get the point, because you said it would make 30 million. It made 12.7. Yeah.
Pretty damn close, if I say so myself.
Not too far off the mark there, not too far off at all. And the only
twice as much.
But that's kind of surprising, because, you know, I thought that would have done considerably better because of the time of year that it came out. It seemed to have a family-friendly vibe even to it. But, yeah, no, apparently there's not much love for Walter Mitty, so he's probably going to kill himself. Not really, because he's not a real character, so he can't do that. Don't worry, kids, he can't do it. The other point that went out was for Wolf of Wall Street, which I got because I said it would make 18, and it made 18.3. So
that's nice. Well done.
Yeah. So then, we said in the last episode every point would be doubled, which seems a little bit of a fruitless exercise now. So congratulations, Dan. You got 2 points for one answer. And I got 2 points as well. But it's not those scores that matter. It is the final scores. And in at number three, I think for the third time in a row now, for the third year running, I would come third with 53 points.
Oh.
Number two is Gwen with 56 points, which means for the third year running again, Dan, you won Box Office or Bust.
Suck it.
Nice.
Sorry, that was kind of a real cross reaction. Thank you. That's
really
sweet.
I was going to say, no one could be mean about
it. Thank you guys, but then like I earned this all by myself with my kick-ass box office predictions, so fuck you all. I deserve these three in a row.
You won by a clear 10 points, getting 66 in total, making it your third consecutive winning year. Yeah, no, congratulations. You obviously have the gift for predicting how much shit movies will make, so, you know.
Thank you. I'm going to put this on my resume and send this to, like, Box Office Mojo and see if they take me off.
You should totally put it on there. I think that should go under special skills and abilities.
Special skills. I'm good at predicting numbers and money, how much money people make. But not quite as good at saying sentences in orders that make sense.
That makes sense. Jesus. Saying the sentences that makes the orders in the senses. That's me.
I'm good with numbers. Shush, I have 3 box office trophies to prove it.
Just write on your resume, I good with numbers. Not, not so with word. Which leaves us...
So we wipe the slate clean, right?
We do. We wipe the slate clean, starting anew. We'll start next week when Gwen's back and whatnot to start off the year proper. Of course, you've got the Academy Awards coming up in the next couple of months, which is always big point season and always helps get players off to a good start. So if you fancy playing for the first time, you may be totally unaware of what this is. It's really quite simple, to be honest. We take a look at what comes out each and every week in theatres, and then we do our best to predict what's going to be the top 3 films of the week and how much each film will gross for that particular week. A point is attributed to every correctly guessed position and for the closest cash predictions. So whoever gets the closest cash predictions for each film compared gets a point as well. You also get an additional bonus point if you manage to do the opposite of what we all did last week and get all 3 correct. You will get 4 points because your bonus points thrown in there. So if you've never played before and you want to, and please do, because, you know, obviously it takes more than 2 people to take Dan down and his prediction empire. So, yeah, get on board and play for 2014. Speaking of 2014, while I've still got you here, and while we're doing a little sort of wrap-up and a kind of retrospect, what is coming out this year that you're particularly looking forward to?
You know, I actually did a list of this a while ago, and I can't remember a single one that was on it. I am very, very much looking forward to the Grand Budapest Hotel, which is out in a couple of weeks.
Oh, Wes Anderson.
I love Wes Anderson. I love me Wes. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to
Is Bill Murray in it?
Bill Murray is in it. Of course he's in it, as is Owen Wilson and Jason Schwartzman.
That's a surprising.
Leave him alone. Well, there's so many really good things that are coming out this year, and I've just my mind's just completely gone blank for all the things I was looking forward to. Yeah, I honestly I can't remember a single thing.
Well, I've got a list. I've got a list of stuff. If you want to go on, remind me if there's anything that you.
My most anticipated is Inherent Vice, the new Paul Thomas Anderson film based on the Thomas Pynchon book. I really do think his adaptation of that's going to be super, super good, especially reuniting with Joaquin Phoenix, because obviously last year The Master was my number one for the year. So if he can recreate that, then we might be talking about Inherent Vice again in 12 months' time.
Inherent Vice, I have to say, actually, it seems like real good source material for someone like PTA to work with. So I, for one, am looking forward to it, even though I haven't seen The Master still, which I know that you're not best pleased about. Yeah, I know, it's just...
I'm not, no.
It's, you know, too much to fit in, but eventually, soon. I think early, soon-ish, before major things start coming out, would probably be the best
time. I think you'll really like it.
I think I will as well. I do like myself a bit of wackadoodle, and I'm quite partial to a bit of PTA as well. For me, I've got a list here. Wolf of Wall Street, which comes out pretty soon, but I'm getting the chance to see sooner than expected. Her, which these are kind of grey areas for listeners in the US. Obviously, you may have seen it the earlier side of 2014, as it were, but it's what we get given over here in the UK. We just have to sort of wait for seconds to be served up sometimes. Godzilla. Oh my goodness, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago about my excitement for Godzilla. Holy shit, am I excited for this. Do you know what? I was really disappointed with this summer. I thought the whole year as a whole was great for films. I thought this was one of the weakest summers we've had for many years.
Totally. I agree too, yeah.
And I think this year is going to more than make up for it, because there seems to be some really interesting and stunning looking projects on the horizon for the summer of 2014, Godzilla being one of them. It just looks awesome, and it's directed by Gareth Edwards, who made Monsters, which is such a beautiful film, and I'm glad to see him getting more work, and I hope that off the back of this he gets more free rein to do what he wants to do. I hope there's kind of a Chris Nolan knock-on effect, you know, one for me, one for you type thing with him, because I think he's got an interesting mind, so...
Which reminds me that Interstellar is also one of my most anticipated of the year.
Yes! Even though we've not really seen much of it, because that trailer doesn't really show you an awful lot, you just kind of get to see, like, almost Terrence Malick-esque fields of grass and Matthew McConaughey driving a car.
Just think about that sentence that you just said, and try and think maybe why I'm so excited about this film.
Okay, yeah. I don't need to dissect
Terrence
that too
Malick
much.
Terrence Malick and Matthew McConaughey. There you go.
Through the filtered prism of Chris Nolan.
That's it.
Jesus Christ, that does sound exciting, yeah. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I'm looking forward to in terms of summer blockbusters. Jesus, those apes. I swear, they're just trying to give me a complex of monkeys, and it's working, because I've never seen an ape look so ferocious as Caesar does in that recently leaked trailer. X-Men Days of Future Past, I was a huge fan of First Class, but this it is really exciting grounds for me, and also really kind of intrepidous area, because Days of Future Past is one of my favourite all-time sort of comic arcs. And so I am so excited to see it, but at the same time I was like, please don't fuck this up. So anyway, yeah. Interstellar, as you mentioned. Oh, the man himself, Mr. Darren Aronofsky's back in 2014 with Noah. Jesus, it takes somebody very special to get me really excited about a biblical epic. I tell you now, but if there's one man that can do it, it's Mr. Aronofsky. Holy shit, that film just looks epic. You don't seem so, no?
I'm kind of conflicted between my love for Darren Aronofsky and how not that great it looks. No, I didn't like that. I don't mind him sometimes the Bible too much. It just doesn't look particularly that good.
How dare you take that back?
It looks like a very good special effects film, and I don't really get a lot of Aronofsky in it so far, but I know that, you know, this is a Paramount film and they're not going to market it as a Darren Aronofsky film.
Yeah, no, because
so I think there's probably going to be more to it than what they're showing on the surface, but I just can't get excited about it yet. I'll see how I feel in a few months or weeks or whenever it's out. I'll definitely see it, but I'm not really feeling it at the moment.
Speaking of big returns, I mean, this year, just instantly straight off the bat from the films that we know about, so many amazing directors coming back, and one that I'm really looking forward to seeing return is David Fincher with Gone Girl, which again, the source material seems really up his alley.
Nice, I forgot all about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jeez, what a good year we've got coming out.
I know, right?
New Nolan, new Fincher, new Aronofsky, new Anderson... New Anderson too.
Jupiter Ascending. I'm kind of really interested in this because Cloud Atlas didn't really do it for me. I think visually it was a stunning film, and the Wachowskis did a good thing there, but I kind of want to see them do more sci-fi based stuff that isn't kiddies racing around in fast cars. So Jupiter Ascending could be pretty good. I've got that on my watch list.
I assume this is a new film by the Wachowskis, right?
Wachowskis.
I got my Wazes mixed up.
Yeah, it's a new film from those two. How to Catch a Monster as well is on my list. First directorial film from Ryan Gosling. It's got Matt Smith in it, who looks totally different and bonkers. One big film that I'm really, really looking forward to, though, is Transcendence, which is the first directorial film from Wally Pfister. You don't seem to.
I was really excited about it, and I wasn't really too enthused about the trailer. I'll give it a go.
It's Wally making a weird sci-fi film. How can you not be excited?
I saw the trailer was released, and I was like, oh, this is so exciting. You know, Wally Pfister's done such a great job on the Batman movies and Inception, and you know, if he can take like those influences from Nolan and make a film himself, it's going to be great. And then I don't know, it kind of feels like someone trying to make a Christopher Nolan film as opposed to, you know, someone trying to like find their own style and their own voice, which is a bit disappointing. But you know, that trying to, you know, follow in Christopher Nolan's footsteps isn't a bad thing by any means, so who knows, I might be surprised by it.
He might be just saving all the good stuff, like Aronofsky saving all his Aronofsky stuff for the actual film. Snowpiercer, which, you know, is a mutual love between me and thee.
Yes, of course. I've got it pre-ordered on Blu-ray from France. I need to learn French before March. This is how excited I am about it. I'm going to learn a new language to watch Snowpiercer. I think it's mostly in English, but I know that it's going to be subtitled a little bit here and there, so just going to have to get my Google Translator on.
I really hope that the issues concerning the cut of this film get resolved soon, one way or another. Either Weinstein kind of just goes, do you know what, just release it as it is, which, knowing his past record, he probably won't do, or that it just finds another distributor, because I kind of feel like it's a film that shouldn't really be messed about with and cut, especially to fit a producer's vision of a westernised audience.
See, this is what I don't like about it. I mean, I'm perfectly okay with films getting a little bit of a cut. Like, I saw the French version of Mood Indigo last year when I was on the plane, and it was terrible, and it was just so long and so overindulgent. I know that they then cut like 30-35 minutes from the film, and I haven't seen this new cut, but it did need a cut. It absolutely needed a cut. So I understand it in some circumstances, but what annoys me about this is that, you know, you've got this film that's had incredible reviews and an incredible reception from the territories that it has been released in, like South Korea and in France, and then Weinstein has took it and kind of gone, I think his actual quote was, we want audiences to understand it in Oklahoma and Iowa, which is kind of offensive for a start.
Ever so slightly.
And then, but also his idea is, you know, we don't want any of the kind of political subtext, we don't want any of the character work, we don't want any of that writing stuff and those words, those pesky words, like, we just want this kind of raid-like action film, which isn't what it's meant to be.
No.
But I'm not too optimistic about it getting a kind of director's cut over here, I think. And then in the US, I think it's probably going to get the Weinstein cut. But like I said, you can pre-order the film from France at the moment, so I think if you really want to see it, that's probably, unfortunately, going to have to be the way that people go.
Out of interest, where have you pre-ordered it from?
It's on Amazon.fr at the moment, which is the French Amazon. It's called it's still called Snowpiercer, but I think it's got a little funny accent over one of the East. It's like €20 or something, so it's actually a pretty good deal. There you go, Amazon. Free plug for you.
Free plug for you, and possibly another purchase for me, to be honest. Other films I've got in my list, Raid 2, which, you know, on paper, you just think, no, don't do it. Don't do it. The first one was so great. Don't try and recapture lightning in a bottle. But I don't know if you've seen the trailer for the Raid 2.
I have, yes.
Oh my god, that's a trailer. No, that's how you make a trailer.
It's really good. It is really, really good. And the little kind of flaws I had with the first one, I feel like it's almost sort of ironed out for this one. So I'm not saying that it's going to be better, but it could potentially be better.
I think with it being in a more open environment, I think definitely helps in its favor. I don't know whether calling it the Raid 2 does. You could have easily just called it something else and hinted and
Maybe.
allured at the idea that it continues from where the first one left off. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that very much so. Only Lovers Left Alive is coming out at some point this year. The Jim Jarmusch film with Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston as
Yeah,
vampires.
our favorite Tom Hiddleston. I think it's out in March in the UK, and I think it's probably out around the same time in the US, which will be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm always ready to jump on any film that Jim Jarmusch does simply because of the man's proven history. But this project sounds really quite interesting, and when you put two actors of that caliber in such a sort of offbeat role, yeah, I'm definitely going to be wanting to check that out.
You too.
I also got on my list just a couple more. Enemy, which is from Denis Villeneuve, the man that made Prisoners. Obviously, with Prisoners being my number two, it's a no-brainer. I want to see what he does next, so that's on there. Magic in the Moonlight is the next film scheduled from Woody Allen. And after
Oh, cool.
how.
I didn't even know it had a name yet. That's awesome. Magic
Yeah.
in the Moonlight. That sounds cool.
It's like a period piece. I think it's from like 50s LA, and it's got Emma Stone in it, and that is as much as I know about it. And you know how it goes with Woody Allen. The law of average is that it probably won't be great, but I've got high hopes, I've got optimism.
You mentioned that Gareth Edwards was doing like one for them and one for me before. I think Woody Allen does one for them and one for nobody. So I hope this is a unfortunately, if that's the kind of the pattern that it goes in, this is going to be terrible. But I hope he kind of breaks that pattern. He's got some kind of late spurge of inspiration after Blue Jasmine.
I hope so. I'd love to see him pick up a bit more consistency. Because when he's good, he's great, as he's proved with Blue Jasmine and Vicky Cristina Barcelona and Midnight in Paris. But when he's not great, he's a why would on
You
why
get to
bother
your
would
room
he?
with love.
Yeah. Or To Meet a Tall Dark Stranger or whatever that film was called. I've forgotten its title already.
Yeah.
So yeah, fingers crossed that Woody's kind of got a bit of consistency. Yeah, I'm hoping he bends his law of averages with this one. And the last one on my list is obviously one that you'd be excited for. It's Knight of Cups by Terrence Malick, who, you wouldn't expect to be making a film so soon, considering his track record. But yeah, he's got a film coming out this year with Christian Bale and Natalie Portman in it.
He kind of broke my heart this year, Terrence Malick. So we're going through a bit of a fallout at the moment. But it's like,
Is he doing a Woody? Is he doing a
I want Terrence Malick to not make a film for about 15 years and then come back and make something amazing. Like, I don't like this new Terrence Malick that's making something every year. I want him to go away and like, I don't know, stare at stars and write poetry or whatever Terrence Malick does in my mind for like 15 years, and then come back and be like, yeah, bitches, this is my new movie. Take it.
So
And like. And this, I think that's sort of the problem with The Wonder. It just kind of feels like he just kind of. It feels like suddenly Terrence Malick has got to like 17. He's like, oh shit, like I've made four films. And it's like suddenly trying to make up for lost time. But I don't like that. I'm just like, just give it 10 years. Just, chill out, put your feet up, come up with a great, great film, and then make it for like 5 years, and then release it. That's how it should be done.
He's trying to compensate for all those years of playing ping pong in his basement by himself.
Well, that's one way of imagining Terrence Malick. I think I prefer to imagine him looking at stars in a wheat field, but yeah, ping pong will do.
No, ping pong in short shorts and really high socks and nothing else.
Listening to like it's a really bad 80s pop song, isn't it?
Exactly, listening to 80s synth pop and new wave records, fashioning himself like a mullet haircut, trying on
Do you know what? It's funny you mention this. Do you know what one of his favorite films is? I swear to God, this is true. Do you know what one of his favorite films is? Zoolander.
No way.
I swear to you, it's true. Apparently, he wrote to Ben Stiller and was like, "I love Zoolander."
That's crazy. Can you imagine getting a letter like that? Like, dude, where, first of all, where are you at this point in time? You've been gone for years. Oh, are you playing ping pong? All right. Oh, it's nice that you liked my film. I don't know why. It's all right, but you're Terrence Malick. You're the man with the hat.
Oh, he's amazing. I think I've just slightly fallen in love with him again.
All
Just
over again.
talking about him and his love for Zoolander in short shorts.
Oh goodness. So you're a little bit on the fence with Knight of Cups. So you're gonna kind of take it as it comes and see what
Yeah,
happens.
I am. I think my adoration period's over, and now I'm kind of in a, you were so good, and you made like 4 10 out of 10 films, and then so the slumber came along, and now blah.
Yeah, but that's just one. It could just be a hiccup.
Maybe, I suppose.
I
I
mean,
still love Woody Allen. He's made about 20 hiccups, so I don't know
well, that's true. Yeah,
why I'm doing this, but.
that's true. When he starts going on an inconsistency roller coaster, like Woody, that's when you start to be a little bit worried.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But yeah, one hiccup we can let slide. But yeah, we'll see how it comes when it comes out. But that's just a few lists, or a list of a few things on a singular list of things coming out in 2014 that I am particularly excited for, and obviously Dan's excited for some of them as well. But what I want to know is what you are looking forward to in 2014. Anything in particular that is grabbing your attention? If so, let us know over at screeninvasion.com. Just look under the Screen Invasion Radio section of the website. You'll find it easier than I can describe it to you. And you can also go to twitter.com/invasionradio as well and let us know what some of your favourites of 2013 were and what some of your most anticipated films of 2014 are gonna be, what you're most excited for. But other than that, I think it's time to finally bid 2013 adieu. But not before we ask the big question we ask each and every week: where are you gonna be on the internet, and what kind of things have you got in the pipeline for us coming up? It's not necessarily in this next week, because we're in that quiet spell, but in general.
Well, you can find me on Twitter as always, at twitter.com/ Daniel Sarris. You can find me on Letterboxd. I'm still reviewing pretty much everything that I see over there. The URL is letterboxd.com/dsarath. I've been watching like pretty much all of Martin Scorsese's films for the last couple of weeks, so I'm gonna publish a list on there of my favorite Scorsese films soon.
Oh, cool.
So keep an eye out for that. I'm also kind of thinking of starting my blog up again because I kind of miss writing on
You
my
should
blog. I haven't
do.
done it for about. I think the last thing I wrote was Trans. That was the last thing I did, and I kind of miss doing it. So I think I'm going to start it up again. I might kick it off with a best of 20 best 25 films of 2013 article. So if you want to see what didn't make the top 10 and just missed out, I guess you can maybe potentially perhaps head over there in the next week or so and see that.
Let's do it, listeners. Let's bond together to get him to do it.
Yeah, you know what, I think I will.
I think you should. Ah, go
I'll probably
on.
do it for about. I think I'll probably do it for about 3 weeks and then forget and
Oh well,
not be able to commit to it.
there'll be
But
three
there'll
glorious
be three
weeks.
great weeks. Yeah,
that you can look back at this time next year and
and be
feel.
like, that one review I did was awesome.
You can find me at twitter.com/IamMalkovich. I have since sort of changed entities over the Christmas holidays. I kind of had an epiphany of sorts, because I was doing my music site at Speaker Box Below, and I was doing my film site, Cinema Loco, and it just occurred to me, probably much later than it would to a normal human being, why are you doing two when you could just all host it in one place? So that's what I've done. And you can go to daysoffuturepast.com, that's DAZE offuturepast.com. And you can find a whole bunch of stuff on there. You can find my top 25 films for the year, so you can see what didn't make it into the top five, but still are very, very fantastic films that you should go watch if you haven't seen already. Same with albums. If you are looking for music choices, you can see what my favourite records of 2013 were as well. And also some sort of picks for the upcoming year. And I've done one review for this year so far, American Hustle, which is it's all right. And I saw Las Vegas today.
Oh wow, how was it?
Yeah, it's a movie.
Nice.
There's one particular scene in which one of the members of, is it LMFAO, at the party rocking, fist
Right.
pumping, brotastic duo, one of them thrusts his crotch in Robert De Niro's face by a swimming pool. It's awesome way to start the
I kind of feel like that just epitomizes the whole movie in a way. I think that's
yeah,
all you
kind
really
of.
needed to say about it. That can just be your review.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, someone should just make that into a GIF.
And just save us like the other like 97 and a half minutes of the movie that we needn't see.
Exactly. Just a review in the form of a GIF. No words needed, just that picture back and forth in Robert De Niro's face. It's honestly quite disturbing. He shouldn't be having crotches of really shit Z-list pop stars thrust in his face. The man-made taxi driver.
Was gonna say, how the mighty have
He was
fallen.
Travis Bickle, and now he's
This guy was
having.
Travis Bickle, this guy was in Raging Bull, he was in The Godfather, and now he's getting thrusted up by the member of LMFAO.
Oh, what has happened? Is this how we're starting the new year? Oh, it can't be. And suddenly, all my hopes come crashing down. If you were to see if I recover, then make sure to join in with us next week, when I presume we'll be recording if we can all get our schedules synced together. Hopefully, we will. We'll sort something out. But yeah, go do that and go subscribe to us in iTunes if you haven't already, and you can catch up with the various other 100 episodes we've done. And you can see all of Dan's winning moments throughout the last 3 years for Box Office or Bust. And you'd do that
Yay.
if you wanted. But other than that, make sure to visit screeninvasion.com. Keep your eyes out there for all manners of things fresh and funky and new and cool and interesting. Whole smorgasbord of good stuff on there. But until then, enjoy whatever you're doing and be safe. And don't thrust your crotch in Robert's face. He doesn't like it very much.